My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. The holidays are here, my friends. We are past Halloween. Thanksgiving is around the corner. We can't wait to roast some turkeys, eat some turkey necks, get some stuffing. And then we got latkes and eggnog before we know it. We can't wait. It's such a great time of the year to cook, be with friends, be with family. Remember to check in with yourself and each other. Sometimes the holidays are hard, but if we're in it together, we're in it to win it. We have our favorite LA baking couple. Well, I would just say our favorite baking couple on the show today, Hannah Connor Smith, Gemini Bakehouse. We talk about how they met, how they rose to prominence in the LA baking scene, how they started Gemini Bakehouse out of their house and eventually moving into their own spot with our good buddy, Tommy Brockert of Lasorted's. It's a really fun episode, some really great insights of how just to get out there and hustle. And we also talk about Fam Bam Thanksgiving, which is happening Friday through Sunday, the 11th, 19th to the 21st. It's their annual Thanksgiving extravaganza. Stuffing, biscuits, fried turkey sandwiches, pot pies. It's delicious. It's happening. Get your orders in now. And trying to beat their last year record of pies sold. They will not leave you high and dry. So get those orders in now. And then we dig deep into the New York archives for one of our favorite rock bands, Huh, which played in the studio in the shipping containers. It's a real, real great performance. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. What it wants. Am my heart wants all at once. My body breaks in new ways. My mouth has a new taste.
Hannah, Connor, welcome to Snacky Tunes. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy baking schedule to sit down with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And
shout out to Mac, the baby in the background.
He's
got some real baking LA hot takes coming up in the second part of the show, is what I heard.
It's coming
all,
at you.
Stay it's tuned. All he knows as of right now.
Hot takes. So as my favorite baking couple in LA, I heard a rumor that you guys met while braiding challah overnight at Wildflower. Is this true?
It is very true. And we've been waiting to like tell this story because we're like, no one knows about it. And it's so cute. I moved back from school and it was the first job I could find and I took it. It was my first overnight shift. And I remember like walking in and seeing Connor. He was working the deck at the time. But for the majority of our shift, I think it was like 5 or 6 hours of the shift, we would stand across from each other while like portions of dough would be thrown off the table and we would braid hundreds of challahs and listen to music.
A real Yenta moment via baked goods.
Yeah, I don't think it gets much better. I mean, and you're just talking. It's like constant small talk for those hours. Yeah.
Hold on one second. I have to get the door for Anna. One second. Hold on.
Oh, Anna.
Sorry, someone's at the front door and Anna was in the middle of motherly stuff.
Oh, good.
Okay, let me just pick it up. So while you two fell in love with each other over baking, when did you, each of you, first fall in love with baking itself? Did mom, grandma, grandpa, someone in the family, what got you in the kitchen baking goods and at what age?
Well, for me, it was... I fell into baking. I dropped out of high school when I was 16 and I was just trying to find a way forward, man. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do, generally speaking, with life as a whole. And I kind of got lucky enough to get this gig at Wildflower with a group of people that were kind of willing to bring me on and teach me how to do this stuff. And, you know, so initially I was just like stoked to have a job and kind of just have some money coming in, and I didn't really think much of it as anything more than a job. And then when Hannah came in, so that was maybe 6 months after I had started working there, I just kind of had a knack for it. And but when Hannah came in, she kind of showed me that this is more than a job, or it has the potential to be more than a job, you know? So it kind of, when she came in, she was fresh out of, you know, she was in culinary school and was managing a bakery in Rhode Island. And she was super serious about the work we were doing, more so than anybody else there, and took it very seriously and was, you know, very studious when it came to her note taking and learning how to do the bread productions, because I was new to her at the time. And so that was kind of my first realization that like this could be more than a job, you know, like this could be a career, because this girl, like, this is her dream. You know, this is what she wants to do, and this is what she wants to do with her life. And so I really do owe it to Hannah to, kind of bring that to my attention that I could do this, you know, and at the end of the day, I also owe it to her that I wanted to get better at it and be good because I saw how much she cared about it and how much she was into it. So I was like, all right, well, if I can get fucking good at this, man, then maybe she'll dig me, you know? And
Yeah, baby. I care about that Annalise process. Yeah, let that flower hydrate. Well, you bring up a good point because so much of a distinction is drawn between chef and pastry chef. And I think that's changing even as far as seeing Food and Wine put a couple of pastry chefs on their best new chef list this year. Yeah. But Hannah, what drew you into this route? Because I know that you've done savory cooking before, but what is it about baking that, you know, puts you on this path?
Well, that's actually my view on pastry is to like at least take away the divide of the pastry chef and chef because the amount of pastry chefs I've worked with who don't know how to cook.
Sure.
It's huge. And so, you know, I cooked with my grandparents quite a bit and baked with them. And there was never a divide of like, my grandma was more of a baker or more of a cook, or my papa was the same way. So I didn't like grow up with those divides, but I knew that I like belonged in a kitchen. And as soon as I started to like become in the pastry chef department, I was like, there doesn't need to be a divide. I should know how to season like a stock as much as I know how to season a jam. So that's always been super important to me is if I'm a pastry chef at heart, but teaching pastry in a way that's not so scary or by the books. By the books, I mean like following a recipe, treating it more like cooking.
Right, because that's the biggest thing where it's like you can freestyle a little bit more with savory cooking and things like that, but baking can be intimidating, especially when you get to that next level. But what I've found is that the more comfortable you get with baking, there's more
flow than people think.
Yeah, especially when you get into hydration or when you're adding in ingredients and a balance and things like that. It's interesting that you two sort of found each other early in those baking careers, especially in LA. What were those early days like? I mean, now LA, I consider a bread bakery city with no asterisk. But back then, carbs were still a little bit of a no-no. So how did you guys navigate your early careers? Did you guys go along together or did you find your own paths and then come back together?
A little bit of both, you know. So after Wildflower, we went our separate ways. So I left first and went to a bakery in Santa Monica, and I was there for a little while, and shortly after Hannah went to Bottega Louie downtown. You know, it was like at that point we were kind of, I mean, she was already well on her way and understanding her path and wanting to continue to pursue pastry. And I mean, I really, even at this point, I still wasn't super familiar with the scene or with the food with the food scene in general as a whole in LA. I was just kind of still just trying to make my way, and I dug the process, so I kind of wanted to keep learning about it. And then I followed her. She ended up getting me a job at Bottega Louie, and so she was the chef de partie over there, and I was in the bread department. So it's funny how it worked out now, because we both, the way it worked out, like, I mean, I'm very much into the bread and vinoiserie stuff, and so I'm kind of in that little realm, and then Hannah kind of takes everything else. So we were kind of, but they are sort of their own worlds. So it's worked out to this point where we kind of both are able to cover ground that the other one may not necessarily be able to cover. And so together we cover a lot more ground as a unit, but it really just kind of, I think we both continue to pursue what we were interested in without sort of a design in mind, at least early on, you know. It was just, There wasn't any talks, you know, at least then, of us opening a place or anything like that. It was just following the passion, man. You know, we just both dug what we were doing and just wanted to kind of keep doing it. And I just wanted to happen to be doing it near her. Bear in mind, she got me the job and I was super stoked about it. But she was not about it. Like, I was like there, and like, look, I was getting the cold shoulder for months.
The relationship at that point was in what it is now, which
I had to work my way back in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, look, you gotta temper that butter, man. You gotta let it come up. You gotta let it come up slowly.
And it was up and down there for a while, but then we near the end of my time at Bottega, then we were in a full blown relationship.
And she was pregnant with twins, so she had no choice. Got her.
Yeah, I got her. talk about buns in the oven. Am I right?
Whoa, that was our birth announcement. Yeah. Cheesy Instagram birthday.
Yeah, it was great. I remember it. I laughed very much. So
we were obligated.
So you're together as a couple, and you have kids on the way, and you're baking. And look, life as a baker, life is in the restaurant industry in LA is tough as it is. When did the idea start to, I would say, give rise to going out on your own?
You know, when it happened, the girls were born. The girls were born, and we started this little concept. We were like, maybe let's try something. And our first thought we ever had, it was called bread and butter, which is the saying we say when you're holding hands and you let go, you say bread and butter. It's like a cute saying you say, like our grandparents said it. And we started, but it never went anywhere because
we were just kind of flirting with the idea early on. But I mean, right after the girls were born,
it was the first time I was off in 10 years when the girls were born.
Right. And so, but we also like needed to pivot because like, even when the girls were born, I was at that time, I was still really just a kind of a journeyman baker and just trying to just keep things going. And, you know, now we have two kids and we needed to like, and Hannah was going to be off. So like, that's when I kind of took a pivot and like tried my hand at managing. So that was my first sort of salaried gig. I sort of finagled it, you know, and got myself tricked somebody essentially, you know, to be willing to give me a management position. And so from there, I was like, I realized that, well, I already knew what she was capable of because she'd been managing and she knew how to run a kitchen pretty efficiently, especially something like Bottega, which is a monster, you know? So,
right.
I mean, to be able to do something as fine as a lot of the stuff is there, but also be able to do it in huge numbers. So like kind of, she had already proven herself, not that she needed to, but I could see what she was capable of. So it was kind of in my head, I needed to figure out that if I could do that on the bread side. And so that was kind of that, just dive right in and go for it and learn on the job. And after doing that for a few years, I mean, we get comfortable running somebody else's operation. And then it starts to be like, you know, then you start to get the chance to make your own stuff and try things out. And you kind of, there was a moment, I guess, where I felt that what we were capable of creating was on par with people who are out there doing the same thing, you know? And so at the end of the day, it was kind of like, well, if, you know, if these people can do it, like we can do it. If like, why can't we try it? You know? And, so then that's when like we started talking about it and floating the idea and, you know, dreaming about having our own bakery and, you know, the whole romantic side of it and thinking about it as like a fucking rom-com, you know what I mean? And, and then the pandemic hits, man, you know, and,
then I was laid off. But we were like in an okay spot at the time because, you know, and I could be home with the girls and Connor was still working. And we decided to do out of our little bungalow. We were like, let's do something for the Lee Initiative. Let's just do a one day. Let's bake bread. We did bread and we did like a pastry box and like, since we're in a good spot, but other people aren't, let's at least do something. And we did it in La Crescenta, and we advertised on Facebook, like a La Crescenta page that has a silly amount of followers. And it was such a success. And people were like, can you do it again? Can you do it again? And we were like, well, yeah, let's just do it one more weekend. And then Connor has always floated the idea of Gemini. because the girls, twins.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
And what's funny is because we don't know much about astrology, but
that's not the point.
It's Gemini, our twins.
It's got a ring to it.
The first tattoo I gave Connor on his finger is an eye with a diamond. So with our little dad joke for you, gem in an eye.
Oh my God, I love it. As a fellow dad, appreciate a full lifetime commitment tattoo dad joke. Next level.
In it to win it.
What a guy to let me tattoo his finger.
I know. And so that was the start of Gemini Bakery right then and there.
Yeah, man. Awesome. And it was cool, man. I mean, it was just something to do to try to be supportive to our coworkers, a lot of our coworkers who were being laid off and neighbors and stuff like that. And, you know, a couple months later, we found ourselves in the same position. We were both furloughed and out of a job and nothing but time on our hands and bills to pay. And so we just tried to go for it, man.
And bought one piece of equipment at a time, and slowly our dining room had a 60 quart mixer?
No, a 20 quart mixer.
8
foot bench. The whole dining room became a bakery, but we still had this little tiny oven that could fit a half sheet in it
probably. Oh my God. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick musical break, and we're going to talk about starting Gemini out of your house and getting your first few wholesale clients and then eventually opening up a spot with a good bud of ours, one Tommy Brocker of Lasorted's. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.org. Thank you. Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We're with Hannah and Connor Smith of Gemini Bakehouse. So you've converted your dining room into a makeshift bake prep room, and it's all fun and good to do a one-off event and help charity, and that's fun, but that's not a business. And right. You know what we found in the baking world is that you have a storefront, but then you also have wholesale. And wholesale is actually a great way to get the business off the ground behind the scenes, because you can sort of bake anywhere, you know what I mean, with a wink and a nod. And right. But you need those clients. So how did you go out and get your first clients? How did you go out? And it's one thing, again, to also say, like, well, we can do this. People can trust us. But how did you get other people to trust you with their bread program? Because for a lot of, you know, fine dining places, the first bite of food that people have at the restaurant is the bread. So it's an important moment. How did Absolutely. You get the people to trust you? How did you find the people looking for clients?
Yeah, so, I mean, really early on, we just cast a huge net, man. We went out I have most of my experiences in wholesale production, so I kind of mm-hmm. have an idea of how to at least pretend to look like a normal bakery and how to go about that. But at the end of the day, it was just like being on Instagram and finding every single restaurant, cafe, anybody that was within a 50-mile radius and writing them and saying, hey, man, like, or woman, whatever you're getting right now, we can do better mm-hmm. or the same and either beat and match the price or beat it. So at the end of the day, it was just, we just wanted to get our product in front of people, regardless of how we were able to monetize it, you know? So we did that with as many people as possible. And at the end of the day, because Hannah had worked at Petit Trois in the Valley as the pastry sous chef, we were able to get our stuff in front of Ludo and the chef there at the time, which was a really cool opportunity. We didn't necessarily think anything of it, you know, because that's kind of a big fish for us, you know.
Sure.
But we figured, you know,
if they accept one thing, like if they let us do their burger buns, that's huge for us. If they let us do their country loaf, that was huge for us. And then we got the email and they were like, okay, all of it. We were like,
wow.
Oh, okay. And so it turned into, we turned into the people just doing, we were doing 24 hours advance for our neighbors to all of a sudden doing, you know, 48 loaves for one order. It would be like 48 country, 120 burger buns, ciabatta. It turned in all out of a two sheet, so we could only bake 12 buns at a time.
Four loaves at a time. But we were just stoked to have the account, you know? So, like, it didn't matter what it took. Like, we just wanted to get our stuff out there. And, I mean, it's just it was a huge stepping stone for us to be able to say that we were supplying, you know, Petit Trois and Valley and ultimately both Petit Trois locations. It helped sort of legitimize us a little bit to just being this cute little mom and pop deal going on in the foothills to, you know, people start taking us a little bit more seriously because, you know, there's a real deal restaurant with a, you know, a pretty well-known chef who was using our stuff, you know? So from there, we kind of just, that was sort of our stepping stone into, you know,
creating like a real
brand
deal,
as far as wholesale was concerned, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's great. And I think it's about trust, right? Because then you go like, oh, they're doing Ludo. Oh, okay. I can feel good about ordering them. And one begets one, and another one begets one.
Exactly.
But it's still, you're still putting in that legwork. I think it's what people don't really understand. Like, you're still going out and peddling your wares, up and down Sunset and around.
We're going from San Pedro to the Santa Monica. Like, we were everywhere we could be. Like, we were just trying to get our stuff in front of as many people as possible, you know? And
the oven did not turn off. We were taking shifts, sleeping, mixing, baking. Connor was delivering. I would wake up at 3 a.m. to pack the orders so that he could leave and be delivering all day long on busy days. It was wild.
Wow.
A wild time.
Now, my other question is, when did you start to realize that the home bakery wasn't going to cut it anymore? Because it's one thing, because your costs are low. You're just paying rent on your house. Right. But taking on a space, cooking out of there, you know, you need commitments. And that's a really scary, scary jump. When did you feel confident to make that jump?
I think it was around the holidays last year. Around October, November 2020, this had kind of taken on a life of its own, this whole Gemini as a whole. And it was just the sort of, we kind of went into it and said, like, you know, this is working to a degree. Like, we're doing it out of our house. We're maxed out, obviously. So we're not going to be able to take on any more accounts, and we're at a point where we're at a breaking point as far as production was concerned.
And there wasn't like an extra minute in the oven. So like we were timing with the experience we have with production experience that helps us out is we could plan the oven times down to the second. So down to the temperature. So we were just out of time, out of space. There wasn't, you know, our fridge turned into just a production fridge. It didn't have food in it. It was just loaves of bread or vats of jam. And we just ran out of space, time. We needed places to put all this stuff.
I mean, and so that's when it kind of decided, like, are we actually going to do this? You know, like,
sure. Yeah.
Are we going to do this, or are we kind of happy with our little thing? It's like, so we kind of had the conversation as a family and decided that, like, you know, this is kind of everything we've ever wanted. It's something that we've talked about. The timing is weird because it's not like we built up to it. It's kind of, we just threw ourselves in it. But honestly, if it didn't happen this way, I don't know if it would have ever happened, you know, because there's never a right time to fucking jump into this, you know? And, so we were just at a point where it's like, what do we have to lose? You know, like, we were like, let's just go for it. And, we just dove in, man.
And it's really how Connor and I thrive. If you look at our whole relationship, how we started, we just threw ourselves into it with each other, with kids. It was not planned, but it's been the best thing that's ever happened to us. So throwing ourselves into situations, we truly thrive at that
just a touch of chaos, you know?
I mean, I love it. Now, speaking of family, you've opened a space with Hannah, your brother, Tommy.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Because, you know, it's a little untraditional running two businesses, at least that are public facing and not ghost kitchens, out of one spot.
Yeah. Well, if we're like, let's the porch pizza hangs. We were helping Tommy at the time. So if Tommy needed help, like either Connor or I would go over there and help him out or go on his on-site caterings, and we would do pastries with him. And we realized early on it was just, we all worked really weirdly well together. The dynamic was really organic.
And to backtrack, so Tommy started doing his pizza pop-ups around the same time that we kind of started doing our Gemini thing. And so they
a lot of emotional late night phone calls of like, why are we doing this? But it's so much fun. And can you help me out tomorrow? Can you be here at 7 o'clock in the morning? And then I think our first space opened up. It was very short lived, but it was definitely the first time we were like, yeah, I think if we do this together, a bakery and a pizza shop really do work really well together. I think what the pandemic showed us is that there's no rules in how you should open a restaurant. And it is a new concept, but so we're working all the kinks, but it will work.
Yeah, that's what I liked in the silver lining, if there's anything you like about the pandemic, is that it took away any sort of stigma of how you would want to open or run a restaurant or business, because it showed the system was broken. It showed that there were different ways to do it. And also took away some of the haters or some people who would be detractors, but, you know, at least competitive when it comes to baking. So, in, you know, beyond just having good baked goods and some relationships, what made you think that you had this competitive edge to get in the mix and to have your own bakery?
Well, I think it's a combination of things for sure. I mean, I do think our stuff is top notch. I think, you know, from our breads to our pies to everything in between, we're competitive in terms of the quality of product that is available in LA, and it's a deep market, you know, especially now. But at the end of the day, I do think the X factor is Hannah and I, to be quite honest. You know, the experience that we've had and the kind of how we've molded our careers has kind of led to this being the only option. You know, both of us are from a really high production, but high quality sort of background, where making great product was always important, but just as important was efficiency and quantity, because, you know, at the end of the day, to have a successful bakery, you have to do big numbers, because it's a, you know, the restaurants as a whole are it's a low margin business. So especially with baked goods, it's a, you know, it's tight. So you have to do big numbers. And thankfully for us, it's kind of our bread and butter, so to speak, doing things in big numbers. And that's sort of allowed us to pursue this and continue to grow while just being the two of us, just being efficient and getting it done and just making good stuff, man. So at the end of the day, I really think that's kind of why, that's where our confidence comes from, is being able to make stuff that's just as good or better than what's out there, but then also being able to do it efficiently and in scale.
I mean, the other thing you got to thank are the customers, because in a short amount of time, you've really built up a loyal customer base. And we've always felt here at Snacky Tunes that long-term success comes from becoming a real neighborhood spot. So right. Can you talk about the community response, and do you have regulars already, and, you know, how you've sort of built a spot in people's weekly shopping or, you know, loyal locals, if you will?
Oh, absolutely, man. And this stems back to the house. I mean, if it wasn't for the community of La Crescenta and La Cañada, the way that they sort of were just willing to, sight unseen, just order stuff from us and a lot of stuff from us, and just for the sake of supporting a local family that's just trying to do something, man. If it wasn't for them, this would have never happened in the first place, you know? So we have everything to owe to La Crescenta community as a whole, first and foremost. They really sort of, if it wasn't for them, this wouldn't have happened, you know?
And then
I love it.
And then it goes, now that we're here in a Silver Lake spot, it was really, I was pregnant throughout the whole thing. So when we opened up for our first pop-up, I think I was only 3 months pregnant. And as our shop grew and we did these small renovations at the, like, as now the inside of our shop is finished, I was 9 months pregnant, and I know most of the customers' names. I know what they order. I know about their kids, and like, they're really truly talking to me, and I want to talk to them, and they know Connor's in the back hustling, baking bread and making breakfast. And they know it's really us, and it's been so beautiful to see the same families. I see them walk up every Saturday or every Sunday to get their loaf of bread for the week.
The sense of community in Silver Lake is
really,
it's
nice.
Crazy, man. I haven't seen the way that we were welcomed here right away was just unbelievable, man. And I've worked for other businesses in the area and kind of had a little bit of a feel for it. But, man, the way people have come and just to, like, even just check in and see how Hannah's doing and how the baby's been. And it's special, man. It's a different, I don't know, it's made this whole process that much more beautiful. It's like we're doing what we want to do and trying to get it done. But the fact that we are really sort of sharing it with the community and have been welcomed in and are able to participate now with our neighbors. And it's just been really special, man.
I mean, it's amazing. And what also gets me excited is that we're coming up on the holiday season, and I know you guys have a lot of special treats.
Oh, yeah.
Kicking off with Fan Band Thanksgiving this Friday. So for people who haven't had a chance to taste the delicacies of a Fan Bam Thanksgiving, what's in store? What's going to be at the shop this week?
So we have, it's all a collaboration, or it's like, I have these weird thoughts, like our stuffing biscuit. We were trying to like figure out like our buttermilk biscuit, but it truly tastes like stuffing. So we're doing that with a turkey sausage gravy. We're also doing a fried turkey sandwich that Tommy like sous vide the turkey. It's like,
it's amazing.
Super light and beautiful with a cranberry coleslaw and our brioche bun. Turkey pot pie. Sophia had our chicken. It's just with the turkey. we're ricotta toast, but with a cranberry raspberry jam. What else am I missing?
I think that's it. Just a lot of good Thanksgiving flavors coming at you Friday through Sunday.
I love it.
You.
Well, listen, guys, congratulations. If people want to follow, check you out, see where they can visit, place orders online, where can they go?
You can go to GeminiBakehouse.com. You can place orders for pickup. Or you can come on Friday through Sunday now from 9 to 2 at
2847 West Sunset Boulevard. Check us out. Most of our stuff, we keep the most updates happening on our Instagram at Gemini Bakehouse. You can see sort of updates and specials that will be coming out for the week, particularly things like our jam, which rotates pretty regularly. So usually updates like that you can find on our Instagram at Gemini Bakehouse.
We're trying to break our record of last year in our Thanksgiving pies. So we're taking those orders until the Monday before Thanksgiving. So we will not sell out. So we're making sure everybody gets a nice quality pie.
What was the number last year?
200 last year out of the house.
We can do it. We can do it, people.
We can do it. We're looking for five. Let's do five, guys.
We're looking for five.
All right. Well, Connor, Hannah, congratulations. Thank you so much. We have a song from the archives and then a live performance from the archives from Ha here on Snacky Tunes on HRN.org. Thank you.
Good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We are live in studio with Huh? Did I get that right? Did I say, you know? A lot of familiar faces around here from the past years in Brooklyn. You want to go around and introduce yourselves?
Yeah. Hey, I'm Carrie Ann.
Hey.
Hi, I'm Tia.
And I'm Molly.
I mean, the previous bands that you have all played in are like a greatest hits of like the last decade of Brooklyn.
Two of us, for sure. Yeah. She's new to town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Detroit?
Detroit, yeah.
Okay. What brought you to here from Detroit?
I got a job at FIT.
Oh. So. What are you doing at FIT?
I'm a visual resources curator, which is a really fancy way of saying that I help faculty find the images and visuals that they need.
That is a really good job.
Yeah,
so like you know the deep dark corners of the internet.
Basically, yeah.
Like if someone needs like a walrus inspiration photo, you're like, I got you.
Yeah, I got it. 10. And I can clear the rights on it.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, I'll okay. get sued. It'll be all good.
But between the Tia and Carrie, like I mean, it's seriously like I've seen you in so many different formations. You want to like run through
greatest hits.
Greatest hits.
Fugue.
Love the Fugue. I mean, you can stop right there. Greatest hit of all time.
Pygmy Shrews, Queening. Those are probably like the biggest ones.
I had Bad Credit, No Credit, as you know, because we were in here.
As I know, former Snackatoon's guest.
And Clapper Claw, my solo project, which is still somewhat active.
So how did Huh, which I just want to work into as many different ways as I can, come to be?
Well, I was a huge fan of Tia, and Tia said she wasn't in a band, and I thought that was really fucked up.
So, yeah, then I remember we drank together a couple of times, and it was just obviously happening.
Yeah.
You know?
And then, like, as you kind of, like, want to move from drinks to actual songwriting, I mean, since you're already in other projects and you're in other projects, what is it that you feel like, you know... Here's another way to kind of like get a voice out there. And like, what did you want to start to say with this new project?
That's a
great
heavy question.
Yeah. I don't know. We had a whole bunch of like different people in the band over the past like year or two. And I feel like it started out a little bit more like jokey, like pop music, and then it became less jokey pop music.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I remember pitching this to you, like, you know, if nobody is out there like making music, like who's making our music like for us, because I can't really think of anybody who's doing what, you know, I want to hear.
And like, and hear like what was like the you know, the infamous like put a piece of paper on a telephone pole and be like, here are influences if you're into these bands.
Oh, that was fun. The first time we got together, I passed around a sheet of paper and had everybody write four bands or something.
I feel like we all said Aerosmith. Am I remembering that right?
I didn't. Okay.
You are not remembering that right at all.
But Aerosmith is definitely
75% of us said Aerosmith.
What were some of the other what was the other bands that were on that list?
I had Dead Boys, I remember.
I remember just saying like, I'm old and I'm gonna be myself, and I think the next band I put down was like Van Halen.
Yeah. It's like from that list, I mean, can you like find those influences in your music, or was that just like a starting conversation point?
I think a bit.
I can hear it a little bit sometimes, but getting Ryan, our drummer, really changed everything too.
How did that change things?
She's got a lot of emo in her. And I think it modernized us quite a lot from our dad rock influences.
Yeah, emo and, like, marching band shops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was, like, really fun to work with. I feel like I came up with things that I never would have popped into my head if she hadn't been drumming.
Right.
Can we hear a song? And just for everyone, Ryan is not here.
Ryan's not here.
So no Hi, percussion. Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
She's in the spirit.
We're unplugged, which we're kind of excited about.
This is so we were like, exciting.
Now we're
this
all set happened. If MTV ever brings it back. We're good
I
to
think
go.
They are bringing it back.
I think they are, too.
Dude, but that's so
think,
great.
But I also think, like that type of thing never goes away. I think, like, in modern day, we know that, like, nothing's ever, like, gone. It's just, like, someone's like, I think we can make money off of this now. and then they just, like, dust it off. What's the first song you're going to play for us?
It's called Dark. And we're going to have a video coming out really soon that's done by Elizabeth Weinberg.
Okay. Let's talk about... Let's talk... I mean, again, song, another okay. greatest... Another great
yeah.
hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Eliz, what up? all right. Well, here we go live on Snacky Tunes. I realize I've never heard the term mom rock. like you, dad rock, I mean, yeah, but like you, like mom rock, like that's not a thing, is it?
Is that like the Indigo Girls? Or?
I would think mom rock is like yacht rock.
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I really don't think I've ever heard the like a that's a classic mom rock song.
Oh, maybe we can do that.
Yeah. Because, like, Indigo Girls is not, that's about, not like, mom rock.
Maybe, like, yeah, my mom would actually kill me if she...
But I think, sorry, but Riot Girl, a lot of those Riot Girls are now moms.
Right.
So
right.
It could be that Riot Girl is just, like...
Our mom?
Yeah. I mean, so it's, like, I mean, just to kind of put it out there. Because, right. There is, like, definitely some, like, really great Feel the Trees vibes going on here. that, like, you know, it's super great to have sitting here in the studio.
Thanks.
I know you say your drummer modernized you away from dad rock. So, like, what were the four influences that Ryan put down to bring?
She wasn't there that day.
Oh, she wasn't.
She just was an influence.
Yeah, just her. Yeah, her way of playing.
Yeah. So you said that the video was shot with Eliz.
Yeah, and we weren't there. It was all Eliz's idea.
Oh, really?
It was all her conception, and I was just like, yeah, that's great. Sure.
Did you see the final product?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. It's not like one of those things where you're like, ooh, I don't, ooh.
Oh, wish we had been there. It's so beautiful. Yeah. It's so beautiful. Like, she's such a great photographer, and it's like her work. It's just like it.
She's amazing. There's someone I did not think that would continually be woven in and out of my life. I met her when I was 18. She lived on the floor above me at BU.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when she was the, she's going to hate this, but the Guster webmaster.
Okay.
which she will definitely hate for this. When this airs, she'll just be like, screw you, man. How was it, you know, working from, it's such an interesting thing to give control for, and I've always kind of thought about bands that are not in the videos, you know, obviously they have some presence of it, but it's a lot of trust within, right, within that. So what was the, conversation or collaboration based on, what you wanted and, how you, kind of put the song together?
As the song, not the video, or?
Well, no, I mean, from putting the song together, how that kind of, fed into the video, that you were, not physically there with, a close-up or,
Yeah, I mean,
the band running around.
I guess we had shot around the idea of, doing, a road trip video, so it definitely, there was an idea that there would be movement in the video, that there's a journey or something, and there's an escape. But she changed it quite a lot and made it a lot better.
She's like, no.
Yeah, that's Eliz all the way. She's like, yeah, that's been done.
Yeah.
But it's a video about a little girl on a paper route. Not a little girl, a teenage girl.
I was going to say, she just put her kid in it.
She put a bunch of kids in it.
She's like,
She's
like, I've got to host the after school thing, so we're just going to put him in
a
video.
She puts her little boy in a wig.
Yeah. So as the project evolves, I mean, I know you have an EP. It's, what kind of, comes from that? Is it touring? Is it, running more together? It's like, I mean, you've both been in such bands, and I'm guessing that you came from bands as well.
Yeah.
Now that you, it's kind of like relationships, right? You always have, your first love and everything, and then maybe that doesn't work out, and you get older. But, as you kind of, get to older bands, do you feel like the process comes easier? There's things that you learned, or, how does that kind of structure or approach change?
Everyone's looking at me.
I mean, you survived the fugue, so
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was definitely faster and easier to just say. I think at this age, everybody's just more okay, here's what I would like to do, and here's what I would not like to do.
Right? Yeah.
It's very clear.
It's like sex. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. When and what we're doing. When we're doing stuff, what we're doing, and when, why. And I don't know. I feel like I'm also just much more comfortable, letting the pop flag fly, and that feels really good.
But I mean, letting the pop flag fly, or being more open to suggestions. Is it more you've been ground down by previous bands, or you have more of an understanding? Maybe we can just try it this way, and it's something new that you might not have been open to before in the past.
Oh, that's a really good way of putting it. I think now it's more it's much more collaborative. I think as a young person, I don't know about anybody else here that's written music, but
I used to get
very sentimentally attached to ideas just because I'd had them for a while or because they were there.
This is my idea.
Exactly. It's no, but I've had that since high school. It needs to be the way it is. It's no, it doesn't.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I start realizing how many decisions are arbitrary, and I'm so grateful to be in a band with other people that will make those arbitrary decisions also, because I think in the past mine haven't been collaborative because people just wait for me to tell them what to do.
Oh, interesting. So it's like just like, okay, this is moving past. Yes, yes, no, 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 yes, no. Okay, now we're on to the next thing.
Yeah. I don't know. This is beyond just like us being older and whatever. I think it's just a good group of people that is not overly defensive and just really wants to make good songs. So.
Yeah, and I think too, like, just coming from another state, something about New York, everyone here is just very like on the ball, I feel like, and so I feel like we're able to get things done quickly, especially because we pay by the hour for our practice fees. So it's like we're gonna get it done, you know, and that's been really nice.
Well, I mean, I've, you know, they always say like from constraint comes the most creativity. If you have like all the resources all the time, there's no tension,
right?
There's nothing to like rally or fight against. That's one of you two also mentioned about, like, you know, churning through some band members, which maybe, like, when you were younger, you're like, oh, here are the four people in the room, we're going to be in a band. And, like, 3 years later, you're like, I can't believe I just spent 3 years with that person. I didn't even like them on the first day.
Yeah.
Do you want to play another song for us?
Sure.
What's this one?
This one's called Stockholm, and it features me singing in really bad French. Damn capo.
I know. Not used to it.
I don't think that you can say that you do something poorly before you do it. I think you have to like let people make their own jugs. Like, I would have never thought anything. I was like, oh, maybe that is bad. I don't know. I don't know.
I played the recording for one of my French friends, and he was like, you really need to enunciate.
Yeah. I mean, that's like if I were to like cook for like a 3-star chef, he'd be like, you really need to learn how to cook. So it's like, setting yourself up. For most people, that's like, yeah, you don't need to say that.
But my justification for, well, you know, I know my French friends will listen, so I have to.
Oh, okay. Oh, I got it. Oh, okay. Well, then I'm sorry. I apologize on your behalf as well. We're really sorry.
But I think they should also probably apologize to me for many decades of French people singing in terrible accents.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, yeah. I mean, everyone's at fault here. EP out, and then what kind of comes next? Tour? More
writing?
That's
the big question, you know. You know, I don't really understand how this business works right now.
we don't have, like, enough time left in the episode to talk about that. There's some great reading on the internet.
Right. We're just trying to put out music and see what happens. And, you know. It's there. It'll be there real soon.
Okay. That's vague and open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like most of my life.
So. Yeah, okay. But any New York shows coming up or anything?
The 5th of June at Sunnyvale is our EP release show. And then I'm gone all summer, so.
Oh. Where are you off to?
France.
Oh. Oh, I know where you can, like, get better at this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you for coming on the show today. So good to run into you on the subway.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, if I could run into someone on the subway every day and they'd be like, I have a band for the show, I would, like, never have to do any work ever again.
I was, like, really hesitant to say hi because it's, like, the morning.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it can go both ways on that. Like,
right.
Oh, you can read if people are just like, oh, yeah, not today. But, no, I mean, I always still think it's magic that in a city of all these people at a specific time, you chose the same car, even, like, a specific spot. So it's like,
right.
I think that's, like, a little bit of, like, New York magic that you run into people on the subway.
The subway churns up people and puts them in your face.
Yeah.
It really does.
I tried to run to a friend who runs at the same time, and every time I try, I never do it, but every time I don't try, it's like a magical morning thing. So where can people find the EP, reach out to you, send you grammar lessons?
We have a Facebook that's HunYork, HunYork, and a Bandcamp under that too. So
okay, great. Well, thanks for coming on. What are you gonna take us out with?
This one's called Anis.
Oh, nice. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week.
First was long ago. Maybe the imperial nature is coursing through them bones. And I was taught to believe there's no limit to the love that I can give. But if I keep pursuing science, I just might locate it. Cocktails and the stories they regale. want. They take you by the arm and lead you to their flats, then turn on the old world charm and in flyover land. I was taken by a man who loved me. Talk about food, we talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.